Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hare. Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Padavati Kacharya Sarva Srimad Divine Grace Stacey Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Iskan Vibhidhananda Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Padavati Kacharya Sarva Srimad Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Ananta Guru Vaishnavinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Dame Sitaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunachananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudha Gaurava Bhaktivinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shamakanda Radhakanda Giri Gopadam Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Navadip Mayapur Dham Ki Ganga Jamunamai Ki Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Harinam Sankirtana Ki Brihat Madanga Ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 22. And we're going to do texts 21 through 24. And then we'll chant 25 together. Okay. So I'll just chant the Sanskrit and read the English for 21 through 24, which don't have a purport. Vichichivirias chavara jo namna chitrangado hata yasyam parasharat sakshad avatirno hare kala veda gupto muni krishno yatoham idam adyagam hitvasva sishyan pailadin bhagavan badarayana mayam putraya santaya param guyamidam jago vitra viryo tovaha vitra viryo hovaha kashiraja sute balat swayam badat upanite Ambikam balike ube tayo ashakta vidayo grihito yakshmanamrita. Translation. Chitrangada, of whom Vichitravirya was the younger brother, was killed by a Gandharva who was also named Chitrangada. Satyavati, before her marriage to Shantanu, gave birth to the master authority of the Vedas, Vyasadev, known as Krishna Dvaipayana, who was begotten by Parashara Muni. From Vyasadev, I, Sukadeva Goswami, was born. And from him, meaning Vyasadev, I studied this great work of literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. The incarnation of Godhead, Vedavyas, rejecting his disciples, headed by Pila, instructed Srimad Bhagavatam to me because I was free from all material desires. After Ambika and Ambalika, the two daughters of Kasiraj, were taken away by force, the Chitravirya married them. But because he was too attached to these two wives, he had a heart attack and died of tuberculosis. So there's no purport, no commentary by the Acharyas, so I'm not going to say anything either about, you know, the trying to elaborate on, giving further insight into it, but I'm just, to the best of my memory, who gave class on Saturday? Radhakrishna, Radhakripa Kataksha, right. So he didn't give an overview of the story, right? He just kind of got right into his purport. Well, I'll just try to give a little, obviously, for the benefit of those who are new devotees and whose memories, and benefit of those whose memories aren't as sharp like me, I'm just going to try to give you like an overview and outline of the whole, because this is kind of the background story to the Mahabharata, and it's probably helped to, if you can kind of see how things fit in place. Okay, so as far as Maharaj, well, one point here is about Vyasadeva, and it talks about how before He was the son of Shantanu. And no. Sorry, he's the son of Satyavati. Before she was married to Maharaj Shantanu, before Satyavati, who, as we found out from the previous translation of purport, wasn't really the daughter of just a fisherman and fisherwoman. She was the daughter of Uparichara Vasu. Vasus are like Upadevas, from what I can understand. This, you know, they're not human beings. They're like in a higher category. And so she was the daughter of Upachara Vasu, but born in the womb of a fisherwoman who is known as Matsyagarbha. And, you know, apparently that Vasu kind of maybe just was out of the picture, and she was possibly brought up by the fisherman and fisherwoman. But, you know, she did have that kind of genetic makeup in her there. So she wasn't just some ordinary fisherwoman, fisher girl. Anyway, so at some point, Parashara Muni became attracted to her, and he wanted to give her a son. So he created, and she was kind of like, well, wait a second, I can't do this. I'm, you know, not married or anything. But anyway, he convinced her it was okay, and he created an island. You know, and then she was in the middle of a river, I believe, and he created an island in the river. And then there was like a cloud that came over them, and he, you know, gave her a child. And that was Vyasadeva. And the reason why his name is Dvaipayana. Dvaipayana actually means one who was born on an island. So that's a little some background information about Vyasadeva. And of course, Vyasadeva is Shaktivesh avatar. Okay, so now on the other side, you have Maharaj Shantanu. Maharaj Shantanu, before he was got married to Satyavati. He was previously married as well. He was married to Ganga, the goddess Ganga of the Ganges River. And Bhishma is his son from that marriage, Bhishma Dev. And a little story behind that too. So Ganga, well, what happened was she just appeared one day, basically. He was touring, and he was, you know, by the Ganges River, and she appeared, this very beautiful woman, and he became attracted, and, you know, they got into a relationship. And she made a condition before she was agreed to marry him, and that condition was, I'll marry you, but on the condition that you don't interfere with anything I want to do. Whatever I want to do, you just have to let me do it. And, you know, and if you do interfere with anything I want to do, then I'm out of here. And he said, yeah, sure, that's okay. I'll deal with that. That'll work. So they got married. And they started having children. And they had sons, you know. So the first son, she just took that son and she drowned him in the Ganges River. And he was shocked, you know, but he made that promise, so he couldn't say anything. And then the second son, same thing. Third son, same thing. Fourth son, same thing. Up till the seventh son. She drowned the first seven sons that were born of them, like that. And just so you know, she wasn't some sort of sadistic, cruel person. There was the Vasus were cursed by Vasishtha Muni. This is like, you know, the background story. And I couldn't get a lot of details, but, you know, sometimes people get cursed and then they beg, oh, but could you at least do, you know, give me this concession or that concession. Maybe it happened like that. But they asked for Ganga to be their mother. Maybe because they thought, well, Ganga's the most merciful, the Ganges River, and she's going to be very merciful to us. And anyway, so that was granted. So they got that, at least that blessing, that benediction, along with the curse that Ganga would be their mother. So that was how, you know, what was going on. Ganga was relieving them from the reaction to their curse. But, you know, they had to take birth as human beings, but then she immediately drowned them and killed them. And then, so in that way, they were released from the effect of the curse. But he couldn't understand that. You know, Maharaj Shantanu didn't know that. And he just thought that, It was maybe, what's, who did I marry here? She's like way out there. But anyway, so she did that 7 times. And then when they had their 8th child, once again, you know, there's probably more details than I am aware of, but he said, no. I'm not going to allow you to do it. You can't drown this child as well. That's forget it. She said, okay, no problem. Here's the child. And but you know, I told you, if you interfere with what I do, I'm leaving. So that's exactly what she did, and she went. And that 8th child, that 8th son, was Bhishma, whose name at that point was, well, actually, even before that, his original name was Dyaus, D-Y-A-U-S, Dyaus. And later to become known as Devavrata, and then also Bhishma. But, okay, so he grew up, and he was, like, you know, very amazing offspring, very intelligent, very powerful, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And everything was going great. Maharaj Shantanu was the emperor. You know, he wasn't just any old king. He was the emperor, which means he's like, you know, the king of all the kings, you know. And his son was going to be the next. He was the only son. So he was going to be the heir, and he would inherit the throne. So, you know, everything was going fine as far as that went. And then Maharaj Shantanu, on one occasion, he was touring, and he came, across Satyavati, and he became attracted to her, and he wanted to marry her. And she was agreeable, but her father was the fisherman, was not a real father, but her, you know, the father she was brought up by. He was kind of clever. He thought, well, you know what? It's some sort of prediction that, you know, her son will be the heir to the throne. So I want to see that happen. I don't want to, you know, I want to see that happen. You have to assure me that that's what will happen. So he said, well, I can't do that because I have a son. You know, according to the law of primogeniture, which is that the eldest son inherits the kingdom. So Bhishma was his son, and he loved his son, Bhishma, you know. He was like perfect for the job, sort of thing. So he said, no, can't do that. Anyway, Bhishma found out about this, you know, that his father wanted to marry this girl, but the father was making a condition, which was that the only way I'll give you my daughter, you know, hand in marriage, is that you have to guarantee that her son will be the next heir to the throne. So Bhishma found that out, and he went forward to the fisherman, and he said, okay, that's the deal? Okay, I renounce my claim to the throne. And he was, okay? And the fisherman said, well, not exactly, because, you know, you might renounce your claim to the throne, but your sons will, you know, lay claim to the throne, and in that way they will, you know, my daughter's son will not be the next to have the right to the throne. And he said, okay, well, in that case, I won't get married. You know, and for a Kshatriya to, you know, to make that kind of a vow, an emperor, you know, I mean, he was, you know, a big time Kshatriya, that was really like significant. That wasn't just some small time thing. So anyway, when he made that vow, apparently the demigods showered flowers from the sky, right? And they heard the voices, you know, from the heavens. Bhishma means one who takes a terrible vow and keeps it. So, you know, he was destined to keep that vow. So, at any rate, upon this, the fisherman was satisfied, and he agreed. Okay. So then his father married Satyavati, and she had... Did I get it right so far? Okay. I thought it was just some eyebrows. Yes, so maybe I made a mistake. But, so... Shantanu married Satyavati, and they had 2 children. One's name was, I think we just heard here, Chitrangada, and the other's Vichitravirya. So Chitrangada, as we hear, he got killed by Gandharva, who's had, of the same name, which left Vichitravirya. And then he was young. He was the younger brother. So background story here is that Bhishma... Well, there was another... Maharaj Shantanu was the emperor, but, you know, as I said, emperor didn't mean the only king. There's a lot of kings, but if he was kind of like the king who all of us acknowledge as, you know, the kind of the head king. Okay, so anyway, one of the other kings, Kasi Raj, who has another name, and I'm, is that Jarasandha as well? I'm not sure if Kasi Raj has another name, but anyway. So he was holding a Swayambara. He had three daughters, and they were of marriageable age, so he had arranged for a Swayambara, which means they get an opportunity to select their own husband from a competition. You know, all these the princes come and they compete, and you know, this way, usually it's the one who's the victor, the one who comes out victorious, gets to have those princesses like that. Okay, so the Swayambara was being held, and but somehow or another, Maharaj Shantanu, Bhishma Dev, they weren't invited, despite the fact that he was the emperor. So anyway, Bhishma Dev just decided, what the heck, I'm going. You know, he decided to go. And he went, and he participated in the competition, and he won. You know, he won. He defeated many of the princesses, including Shalva, who was the person who was supposed to, everybody kind of had, what's the word, earmarked, you know, to be the husband of those three daughters, or at least one of them. But so Bhishma Dev abducted all three daughters, and their names were Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. So he abducted all those three daughters, and he brought them back to marry Vichitravirya, his younger brother, who was, you know, getting ready to be married. And and then what happened was, so they, you know, two out of the three of them were agreeable. Ambika and Ambalika were agreeable, but Amba expressed to Bhishma Dev that, I have my heart set on marrying Shalva. You know, I want to marry him. And I know you've abducted me, and that's, you know, how it usually works. It's a Swayambara. You did it fair and square and everything, but I want to marry Shalva. So I guess Bhishma Dev figured, well, two out of three, that's not bad, you know. So she was allowed to go to Shalva and, you know, present herself and say, okay, I'm here. We can marry. It's even though I was, you know. But apparently Shalva was not agreeable. You know, he raised the argument that, well, no, you've been touched by another man, and, you know, Bhishma in this case, and I won't have you, you know. He was kind of probably also feeling resentful and embarrassed, and because he was defeated by Bhishma in that competition. So in any event, it was not agreeable. He would not marry her, period. So she had to come back. And then she thought, okay, well then, you know, she was thinking, well, you know, he spoiled my chances for marrying Shalva. I'll marry him. Okay. All right. In that case, I have to get married. I'll marry Bhishma. So she decided, I'll marry you. And he said, no, I can't marry you. Why? I mean, you kidnapped me. What do you mean you can't marry me? That's what, you know, why do people come to Swayambaras? If you weren't going to marry me, why are you, you know, messing around with my life? And he explained to her, well, you know, I mean, ordinarily, yeah, I mean, you seem very nice and everything, but I took this vow, you know, that I would not get married. And he explained to her, the whole thing. And she was not appeased. She was not appeased. She was still outraged that, how dare you? How dare you do this? You know, I'm you know, a nice princess. I'm minding my own business. You come to the Swayambara. You kidnap me, abduct me. And, you know, you ruined my chances of marrying the person who I wanted to marry. And now you're refusing to marry me. I can't get married. Nobody's going to marry me. You know? And it's your fault. So she was not, as I said, she was not appeased at all. Am I doing a good job, Marge? I'm telling the story. I don't know, Marge. This is, what? This is his specialty. But, so then she went, and I think it's mentioned here, it was mentioned in the previous verse, she went to Parashuram, who is his martial guru. He learned the military arts from Parashuram. And Parashuram was sympathetic to her. And Parashuram said, no. He's got to marry you. This is outrageous. You know, he's got to marry you. And he said, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of it. You know, so he goes to Bhishma and he explains, hey, you can't do this kind of thing. And Bhishma says, no, but Guru Maharaj, this is the circumstances, and et cetera, et cetera. And he told him the whole story. And he says, no, still, that's, you know, you can't, no, I'm sorry, you're going to have to, that's your vanity. I mean, you can't, this is, you're going to have to take care of this because this is, you know, she's, you can't make an innocent victim out of her. Anyway, back and forth. And then he refused. Bhishma Dev was stuck to his guns, so to speak. He refused to marry her. And Parshuram said, okay, then we're going to have to, there's going to have to be a fight here, you know? So they did. They engaged in this amazing fight. It's described in the Mahabharata, you know, and it went on for, you know, some considerable length of time. And, like, you know, this is, I mean, Bhishma Dev was the most powerful warrior of that time. You know, he was, like, really powerful. But Parashuram is at least minimally a Shaktivesh avatar. And there's different, some places where he's actually, I think it's in the Krishna book, there's one place where he's actually referred to as Vishnu Tattva. So, you know, this is like, he's messing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead here. Anyway, they engaged in combat, and somehow or another, Bhishma Dev emerged victorious. You know, Parashuram was not able to defeat Bhishma Dev. And so after the whole fight, he... I'm going to keep this short because I want to give Maharaj a chance to kind of give some additional insights at the end. Because he backed off. He had to say, okay. And then, you know, so then he had to tell Amba that, well, I'm sorry. I got defeated. I wasn't able to convince him that he has to marry you. And anyway, you're young, you're beautiful. Don't worry, there'll be somebody else. So, but she was not happy. Still, you know, that wasn't, once again, she was not appeased, and she became a lifelong enemy of Bhishma Dev because of that, and she performed austerities. She did the various things to please Lord Shiva to get the benediction that at some future point in time, maybe not even in this lifetime, but at some future point in time, she would be able to do something to mark the downfall of Bhishma Dev. And actually, that was fulfilled. She took her next birth as the daughter of Maharaj Draupad, right? Draupad, Shikhandini, as a girl. She took birth as a girl, a woman again, and later was transformed into a man, Shikhandi, you know, the Kshatriya warrior, Shikhandi. And in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Shikhandi became the shield of Arjuna, the human shield of Arjuna, and he was the reason why Bhishma Dev, wasn't able to fight with full force against Arjuna, because Bhishma Dev, he was thinking, he knew who Shikhandi actually was, that he was a she, so he wasn't prepared to fight against her with full force, because that's one of the Kshatriya codes, that you don't fight against a woman. So as far as Bhishma Dev was concerned, that's a woman. I can't attack her with full force. So he didn't, you know, he kind of was real hesitant and wasn't fighting all out. And Arjuna was able to take advantage of that and, you know, fill Bhishma Dev with a pincushion full of arrows. Anyway, so that's that. Which brings us to, does it? Yeah, which brings us to today's verse, which we'll chant, and I'll say something about that. So we could do the Sanskrit to this one together. Chet. Chetre prajashvavai bhartur Chetre prajashvavai bhartur Matrukto badarayana Matrukto badarayana Dhritarashtram cha pandum cha Dhritarashtram cha pandum cha Vidurum cha yajijanat Vidurum cha yajijanat Chetre prajasya vibrator Matrokto bharadayana Dhritarashtram cha pandum cha Viduram cha yajijanat. We just take one or two chanters because of the time factor here. Anybody? Okay. Jetre, in the wives and maidservant. Aprajasya, of the Chitravirya, who had no progeny. Vai, indeed. Bratu, of the brother. Matra Ukta, being ordered by the mother. Bharayana, Vedavyas. Dhritarashtram, a son named Dhritarashtra. Cha, and Pandum, a son named Pandu. Cha, also. Viduram, a son named Vidura. Cha, also. Api, indeed. Ajijanat, begot. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Bhadarayana Sri Vyasadeva, following the order of his mother, Satyavati, begot three sons, two by the womb of Ambika and Ambalika, the two wives of his brother Vachitravirya, and the third by Vachitravirya's maidservant. These sons were Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. Vachitravirya died of tuberculosis, and his wives, Ambika and Ambalika, had no issue. Therefore, after Vachitravirya's death, his mother, Satyavati, who was also the mother of Vyasadeva, asked Vyasadeva to beget children through the wives of Vachitravirya. In those days, the brother of the husband could beget children through the womb of his sister-in-law. This was known as Devadena Sutotpati. If the husband was somehow unable to beget children, his brother could do so through the womb of his sister-in-law. This Devadena Sutotpati and the sacrifices of Ashvamedha and Gomedha are forbidden in this age of Kali. Ashvamedham Gavalambam Sanyasam Palapaitrikam Devadena Sutotpatim Kalo Pancha Vivarajayet. In this age of Kali, five acts are forbidden. The offering of a horse in sacrifice, the offering of a cow in sacrifice, the acceptance of the order of sannyas, the offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, and a man's begetting children in his brother's wife. And that's found in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Om Aginata Madam Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militamiena Tasma Shri Gudabena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamiena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Garamayam Tadati Swaparantikam. Okay, so continuing on with our story here. So what's happened now is Vachitravirya, you know, the one of the two children of Maharaj Santanu and Satyavati, the older brother has died, Chitrangada has died, and now he's Bhishma got these two wives of the Chitravirya, two out of the three daughters of Kasiraj, Ambalika, and Ambika and Ambalika. We don't know it. Oh, Amba? We don't really know. I don't have. Oh, she probably just went off and started performing those penances for the rest of her life, you know, someplace to satisfy Lord Shiva and get that benediction so she can get revenge. But at least these two, they didn't have an issue, you know, with Vachitravirya. And he died. He died of tuberculosis, as described here. So the mother, the Satyavati, the queen mother, she was kind of, you know, well, what to do, you know? We have to have an heir to the throne. And that's why she called Vyasadeva. It wasn't that she was just thinking, well, you know, got the family house. I mean, there was a big purpose here. They have to have an heir to the throne. So she called upon Vyasadeva to come and father children in the wives of his half-brother, Vachitravirya, you know, brother but by a different father. And you know, of course, he was willing to do that. Because I think Prabhupada says here, where is it? In those days... Yeah, in those days, from someplace in the pulpit, I remember reading that. Yes, in those days, the brother of the husband could beget children through the womb of his sister-in-law. Okay, so it's described elsewhere. It's not mentioned here, but at that time, it wasn't like Vyasadeva. He wasn't living in the household, so to speak. It wasn't like right there on site. You know, he was someplace reciting the Vedas, someplace else, and. So when this request was made, it wasn't like, you know, it was, once again, it was those days. It wasn't like Satyavati got on the telephone or and said, "Hey, Vyasadev, could you come over? I need you to father some children and the wives of your brother." And, "Oh, sure, Mom, I'll hop on the next shuttle flight and, you know, I'll grab the train and I'll be right there." No, you know, it wasn't anything like that. He was off in some distant place, and he was contacted to and was able to go there to where she was by some mystical process, right, which is not mentioned here, but I could mention it. When Vyasadeva was very young, you know, he told his mother that, I'm off to do my thing here, but if you ever need me, all you have to do is fix your mind upon me, and I'll be there. You know, he was Shakshavesha Avatar, he had mystical powers, so he told her that. And she said, "Okay, thank you." And he went off. So when this happened, that's exactly what she did. You know, she didn't send them a text message or shoot them an email or, as I said, contact them on the telephone or anything like that. She fixed her mind upon him, and he got it. You know, he understood. Oh, he was reciting, as I say, he was busy reciting the Vedas, but his mother, he could understand. "Mom wants me. My mother wants me." She's trying to. So, and then he immediately appeared there. And once again, he didn't, you know, use a plane, a train, a car, or anything. He went there by, I guess it's Prapti City. I'm not sure which mystic power he used, but he just disappeared from where he was, and he appeared before his mother, you know, by that mystic process. So that's something interesting there. And, you know, there he was, and then she explained to him what was going on, and he was willing to do this. And the rest of the story is kind of, it worked and it didn't work at the same time, unfortunately. What happened was the first wife, who, let's see, which one is which? Ambika, you know, when he was going to try to help a father, a child with Ambika, she was, the thing is, you got to remember, Vyasadeva was a forest sage. You know, he wasn't like Brahmins are supposed to be very neat and clean and everything. And of course, Vyasadeva was way more than a Brahmin. He was a sage. And they were a little bit of an avidhuta in general. I mean, they weren't so concerned about, you know, the needy clean type of thing. They were kind of like beyond that. So anyway, the reason I'm mentioning this is because when his appearance wasn't that of a needy clean Brahmin. You know, his appearance was that of a forest sage. He had matted locks. You know, he was living in the forest, and he was, you know, he didn't appear very clean. Maybe he didn't even smell very good. He was, you know, just like that. And when they saw him, when this first wife of Vichitravirya saw him, Ambika, she was scared. She was like, "Ah, what's this? You know, you gotta be kidding. I'm supposed to have a child. Oh, my God, no." She shut her eyes. You know, she just, like, closed her eyes out of just fright and, you know, like, wow. Anyway, so, but she, at the same time, she was an elevated personality. She had a sense of duty. She realized, I have to go through with this, but I just can't bear myself to even look with, you know, what's going on. So she closed her eyes and, you know, she had union with Vyasadeva. But as a result of that, the child that was born was blind. That's Dhritarashtra. He was born blind, right? And then, but, you know, that wasn't known at that time necessarily because, you know, it just happened one after the other, I think. I'm not sure of that detail, and they could help me out afterwards with that. But anyway, the next person, when Vyasadeva went to have sex with the next wife, Ambalika, she had a, you know, similar reaction in that she, you know, she saw him and she just went pale. You know, she's just like, "Oh, my God. No way. Anyway, so she just went pale. So as a result, the second child, Pandu, was born pale. And actually the word Pandu means, also another meaning of the word Pandu is jaundice. So, you know, he was born very unhealthy, pale, weak, like that. And then Satyavati, you know, she was aware of the outcomes of this, you know, these two attempts. And she was kind of thinking, well, this might not work. I mean, I know you did it, but I mean, this is like, I don't know if this is going to give us the desired results. So try one more time. So when he went to try one more time, both of them, both Ambika and Ambalika, were unwilling to give it another go. You know, so some, and they sent forth, they sent the maidservant forward. And the maidservant, she willingly went, you know, and she, you know, had union with the Asadev. And the offspring produced from that union was Vidura. And he's, you know, of course, one of the heroes of the Mahabharata, the famous, you know, very wise counselor like that. And so anyway, so that brings us up to this point. And so point Prabhupada's making here in the purport is that back in those days, this kind of thing could happen. You know, this Devarena Sutopati, and the, you know, the, and cow sacrifice and horse sacrifice, and there's five different things they could do that back in those days. Why? Because they had the qualification. They had the qualification. But the reason why it stopped, you know, these things are forbidden in the Kali Yuga, is because, well, in order to perform any sacrifice, you know, you have to be at least a Brahmin. Brahmins are required to perform a sacrifice. And there's no Brahmins in the Kali Yuga, basically. There's nobody with Brahminical qualifications in the Kali Yuga. Kalo Sudra Sambhavan. Everybody's born Sudras or lower. You know, if you're lucky if you're a Sudra, basically, Sudra or lower. And so, therefore, forget it. You can't do these things. And if you need a bit more like a philosophical explanation, it might go something like this, that in order to do these kind of things, you know, perform like a sacrifice where you're going to father a child and your brother's wife, you're doing it as a religious duty. You know, they weren't doing it out of sense gratification. You know, when they when they killed the cow, they weren't doing that as a type of sense gratification. Okay, we can kill a cow and, you know, this is like a way we can eat some cow. No, it was for another purpose altogether. You know, it wasn't for sense gratification. It was to rejuvenate that, give that cow, you know, an animal a new body. All these things, it's just something like that. You see, it wasn't for sense gratification. It was for some other purpose. Now, and they could do that because they had this strong sense of, you know, religious duty. And they understood what they were doing. And they were, you know, predominantly influenced by the mode of goodness, the personalities who were participating, involved in these types of sacrifices. Whereas today in Kali Yuga, people are predominantly influenced by, you know, the modes of passion and ignorance. See? So if they were allowed to do these types of sacrifices, what would be happening is people's ulterior motivations, you see, because, you know, just because of their, you know, karmic makeup at this point in time, that this not qualified, the ulterior motive would get the better of everybody, and they would, and as has been seen earlier on in the Kali Yuga, these activities would be performed, you know, with, for that ulterior motive. You know, the person would be having sex life and the wife of his brother for the purpose of enjoying sense gratification. The people would be killing a cow, not for the, to rejuvenate the animal, just for the purpose of eating, having the opportunity to eat cow flesh. The people would be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You see? So it's out of the question. And that's why it's out of the question. Now, the one about sannyas, that's a little bit different. Of course, I studied up on it, you know, and throughout, you know, Prabhupada's purports, letters, and lectures, and the best I'm able to come up with is it was a different type of sannyas that was just being referred to here than, you know, what, because as you could say, somebody might raise the question, and rightly so, wait a second, you know, these five kinds of activities are forbidden, and one of them is taking sannyas, but hey, we're here, we are in ISKCON, we have sannyasis, and you know, glad we do, because it really helps the society, and, you know, they're guiding us, leading us, inspiring us. And so what's the problem with sannyas? Well, why was that forbidden? It was a different type of sannyas. It was, you know, and it's a different purpose. You know, it was kind of sort of like exemplifying renunciation to a, you know, very extreme degree. It wasn't for the, as Prabhupada says in one purport, I believe it's in the Bhagavatam, the modern-day sannyasi, you know, who's out in the field preaching and trying to, you know, introduce people to Krishna consciousness, is a different kind of man. You know, it's a different kind of sannyas ashram. You know, different types of duties, different types of activities are being executed. So anyway, so that it's not a contradiction. It's just it's a different understanding of the sannyas ashram, and the one that's, of course, being, you know, that we have today is not in violation. It's not, you know, contradicting this Vedic injunction here of that sannyas should be forbidden. But the main point is here that, you know, as it says here, in the Kali Yuga, these five types of sacrifice are forbidden. So we shouldn't, you know, the lesson for us is we shouldn't be interested to do activities that are against Vedic injunctions, but rather we should be, you know, trying to concern to do activities which are consistent or, you know, encouraged by Vedic injunctions. And so, you know, these types of sacrifices are forbidden, discouraged, well, more than discouraged, forbidden. And so, therefore, what is there anything that was supposed to, you know, sacrifice that was supposed to be doing? Yeah. And that's described in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam Tvisa Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshanam Jagnai Sankirtana Prayari Yajanti Hisamedasa, that in the age of Kali, those who are intelligent will worship the Lord. How? By performing the Sankirtan Jagya, the Sankirtan sacrifice. That is the one and only sacrifice that's recommended for this age of Kali. See? So, you know, we don't do these sacrifices, but we do that sacrifice. That's what people, human beings in the age of Kali, the sacrifice that we're supposed to be performing is the Sankirtan Jagya. And I'll read something about that here. You know, just sort of where that Sada, where Prabhupada talks about that in so many other words. Okay, here we go. So this is an excerpt from a lecture from 1973. I think it was in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada says, at the present moment, there is no such family life, no consideration of religion, no consideration of irreligious life. Everything, just like animals. Kalo sudra sambhava. If not animals, they are all sudras. Nobody brahmana. Nobody kshatriya. Nobody vaishya. So it is a chaotic condition of the human society. Therefore, it cannot be revived to the original position of systematic institutional position. It is not possible. Everything is lost. 1973, by the way, okay? Therefore, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace, there's one thing. Then Prabhupada repeats, everything is lost, but now simply by chanting Harinama, the holy name of Lord Krishna, you become again situated in the original position. Everything is adjusted because it is transcendental. So there is no other way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so merciful that from the Shastras he has selected this process of Sankirtan movement. Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Maha Navagani Nirvapanam. The human life is meant for extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence. But we are not in regulative principles. We have lost everything. Our Sanatan Kula Dharma, gone. Everything gone. Under the circumstances, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us the greatest facility according to Shastra. That is the boon of this age. Kirtanad eva Krishnashya mukta sangha parambrajat. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, everyone becomes free from all contamination of this age. Mukta sangha parambrajat. And he becomes so purified that he becomes fit to go back to home, back to Godhead. So this opportunity, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we should not miss. You know, where is the difficulty? Hare Krishna chanting. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Trinad api sunichena, taror api sahishnina. This is the only savior for the human society of this age. So that's what we should do. And we're doing it. Yeah, very nicely here in this community. You know, we have nice attendance to the morning program where we have several kirtans. We have, I think, three chanting parties going out regularly. We have just have one nice addition to this Sankirtan Jagya, which was this past Saturday, day before yesterday. Satchidanoy Prabhu and Mother Shama Priya and their Satchidanoy's nephew, whose name I don't know. He's back there, though. But El Salvador. Yeah. They went up to observatory, and they, with Amarendra's permission, they was set up a little bhajan thing. They were chanting bhajan style in between the by the book table up there by the observatory. And you know, just the three of them, harmonium, cartels, madanga, like that, mellow, as Amarendra said. And it was very well received. Right? The people really liked it. You know, and this is low season, by the way. So no problem with the authorities. It's actually, you know, we have the agreement there, and it actually says in the agreement that we can do it. So, you know, it's a nice addition. So now, in addition to the kirtans here in the temple room in the morning and the harinams we have in the evenings, we have this wonderful, amazing spot, you know, where people from all over the world come throughout the entire year and come in a really big way, you know, in certain parts of the year. So hopefully we'll be able to, you know, develop that further, and we're going to have a nice, really nice presence there with a book table. People, and it didn't adversely affect the, you know, the sale of the books at all. It went on exactly the same, if anything better. And the people really seem to really appreciate the chanting. So that's a nice addition to our Sankirtan Yagya here in New Dwarka. And so that's basically it. So, anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, what about the group?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. I have a question about the first verse you read. I'm wondering if you could elucidate anything where it says, Vishitravira, because of his undue attachment or extreme attachment to his two wives, he had a heart attack and then got tuberculosis.
I was hoping nobody would ask about that. Well, there's no purport here. And I really don't know, to be honest with you. I don't want to speculate. If somebody else would like to have a shot at that, they're welcome. But I it just says he was too attached. Household life, you know. I mean, it can be problematic sometimes. And he wasn't, I don't know. I really don't know. Maharaj, you want to say something about that? Or he's asking the question, how is it that... you know, Vichitravir, he was too attached to his two wives, and therefore he had a heart attack and died of tuberculosis. He was asking, can I give any further insight into that?
No, that's it. He had a heart attack, and he was weak, he was somewhat enfeebled, and that was his karma, to die in that manner. That's all.
Okay.
It's quite simple. Yep. There's no, if you read Mahabharata, it
doesn't elaborate upon that. So even in the Mahabharata itself, there's no further information given. Yep.
I was just wondering, is Parashuramuni Parashuram?
No. Two different personalities. Parashuramuni is the father of Vyasadeva. All right. He's also, you know, great Muni, like that sage. And Parashuram is the warrior incarnation, son, of Krishna, son of, we read about him earlier in this canto, ninth canto, son of Jamadagni. Sutta.
Right. I was just wondering if that was the same person.
Nope. Two different people. Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for a nice recap. Early part of the Mahabharata, there was just a few points I'd like to make.
Sure, yeah, I was hoping.
The first point that you raised the question as to the Vasus, why they wanted Ganga to be their mother, and it was very simply mentioned in the Mahabharata, is that they were demigods, they were Vasus, they were in charge of various phenomena, and they wanted their mother to be also a demigoddess, okay? They didn't want just any earthly woman. So, therefore, they wanted Ganga, and she agreed on that basis.
What was the curse? It was just that they were cursed to take birth as human beings? Or?
Well, the curse had to do with Vasishta, because of Sarabi cow had been stolen.
Okay.
The one who was mostly in charge of that theft was the person who later became Vishvadeva, or Dhyu. So, what happened is that there were eight, okay? So what happened was that they were all cursed, including Dhyu, to live on earth. So then what happened is that they pleaded and they cried, please can you reduce the curse? And then Vasishtha said, well, what we'll do is you have to stay for a short time on earth. And then you can be released. So that's the way that happened. So in other words, as soon as they were born, and Ganga knew the arrangement had already been made in advance before they took birth, that she would kill them, she would drown them, each one as they were born, in response to their wish, because they wanted to return back to the heavenly planets.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
so that was the... But on the eighth is interesting because, as you said and very nicely, Shantanu could not bear, he couldn't stand it any longer. He thought that he had married a complete witch who had been killing one child after another without explanation. And there were reasons why she would not give an explanation. That was one of the basis of their marriage, that he could not question her. And he agreed to never question her decisions or her actions. So, but he finally, after seven deaths, or what he considered a murder, he couldn't stand it. He couldn't bear it any longer. So he finally said to her, "Now, what makes you so mad, so crazy?" You know, he was talking to her like that. So she said, "You have just violated your promise, and this is the basis of our annulment of the marriage." Okay? So, so here's what the next thing that happened was that the eighth child was born, and he, of course, Shantanu wanted to prevent this child from being killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he shouted and screamed, and she said, "Don't worry about it." Now, that was also part of the curse, that the eighth child would live on Earth for a long period of time, because he was the one who had stolen the Nandini cow. Okay, he did it for his wife, because his wife had a friend down on Earth, and if you somehow can get the milk of this cow, you could live unlimitedly, long period of time. So, in other words, it was like the fountain of youth type of milk. So, anyway, that's aside from what I wanted to bring out. So, what happened was that Ganga said to Bhishma Dev, she said, "I will not kill this child." I'm just giving you the reason why she would not kill the child, because Vasishtha had cursed him to stay long period on Earth, whereas the other seven were excused and they could go back quickly, shortly. Okay? So, anyway, Ganga was holding the baby and she said, "I will not kill this child." She said, "What I will do is I will raise him." She didn't give him back to Shantanu.
Okay.
She said, "I will raise him." And she took him up to the heavenly planets where he was taught by Brihaspati all the Vedas and all of the Shastras and all the things he needed to know to be what he became later on.
Thank you. That's an important addition. At what age was he returned?
Huh?
At what age was he returned?
I'm getting... Okay. I'll get to that. So what happened was that... Well, I didn't finish. So that was the first part of his education. The second part of his education was with Parashuram. Parashuram was his guru, as you mentioned in the little part of the story. So Parashuram would teach him all the... could you tell him to move to the side? I can't see your face. Thank you. I'd like to look at you. So anyway, Parashuram taught him all the various astras, everything that he knew. So therefore, Bhishma Dev was very fully, completely trained. You had also mentioned in the course of of the story that Bhishma Dev had defeated Parashuram. That is not exactly the case. What had happened was that they fought for, I believe it's 28 days, neither one defeating the other. Now, what happened was that the night of the 28th day, what happened was Bhishma Dev... He had a dream in which various demigods, high-powered demigods, appeared and gave him a mantra, which was a surefire defeat of Parashuram. It unquestionably would destroy him. So what happened was that... Excuse me. What happened was that on that next day that they were about to fight, what happened was that when Bhishma Dev, he had the mantra... And could use it. And Ganga, his mother, knew about this. So she appeared immediately, like out of nowhere, in front of him. She said, "You cannot do this. You cannot use this. Do not use this to kill a guru. It is shameful." So he said, well, he started the fight. He induced me to get into this whole thing. He wanted me to marry Amba, and I've already taken the vow that I would never marry and I would never have any children. She says, so then he said, well, you talk to him then. So she went to Parashuram, and she explained the whole situation. So Parashuram said, well, nonetheless, he agreed to the fight, and the fight should go on. So anyway, Ganga was kind of doing what you call diplomacy, going back and forth and back and forth. Finally, they both agreed that there would be no fight. Okay? So, but in effect, what you said is true and not true. True in the sense that Bhishma Dev could have killed him because he had the mantra, but he didn't do it because his mother stopped him. And out of obedience to his mother, he refused to use it. Mm. But on the other hand, Parashuram also agreed to no longer fight. So that was one part. So the other thing that I wanted to mention is that the kidnapping of the... well, you didn't mention it was a kidnap. You said it was a Svayamvar. It was a Svayamvar there. But Bhishma Dev had been ordered, well, I wouldn't say ordered, but requested firmly by his mother, not mother, half-mother, Satyavati,
yeah,
to please go and capture those three women, because the Chitravirya could never tangle with those Maharathis, those great warriors there. He'd get killed. Okay? So that was the situation. Bhishma Dev, she knew, could not only handle himself, but could defeat them all since he had the power to do that. That was the reason Bhishma Dev went. He didn't go there, you know, to just see it, or nor did he go there in order to play any part in that. He went there with the express intent, right, of kidnapping them. And that's exactly what it was. Kshatriyas are known to do that, just as Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, the same situation. Mm-hmm. So he took the all three, as just as you mentioned, and he put them on his chariot, and they all, the other warriors, they all went after him. They tried to kill him. Impossible. And so anyway, he escaped and he had the three. So I simply wanted to mention that part, which was fine. And then again, as you mentioned, Amba, she was in love with Shalva, etc. And there's no change. I don't have anything to say about that, because what you said is perfect. And she did eventually, though, perform the sacrifice in which she entered a fire. And as she entered the fire, her last words were, "May I kill Bhishma Dev." Okay? So that was her last burning words. And she was thin as like a almost all bones, you see. And she had done a lot of austerity. And as you said, Shikhandi, now that's a very interesting story. Shikhandi was born, as you said, she was born as a female, but the parents never revealed that to anyone. They revealed to everyone else that it was a male. And that's a whole story in itself. So finally, when Shikhandi had to get married, okay, I thought Shikhandi was supposed to be a male, but as a female. So the brother-in-law of Drupada sent a female to marry Shikhandi, who was also a girl. So you got two girls there. So one day, the female who was sent to marry Shikhandi walked in on Shikhandi, and shirt was off. He was marriageable age, and breasts were showing. So girl flipped out. She became shocked. I'm marrying a girl? So she went back to her father and told her father this horrible story, that it's a big fraud. So the father said, well, this means war. Anyway, long story short, he was preparing for war. What happened was that Shikhandi felt so bad about it, she just wanted to leave the kingdom. So she went traipsing through the forest, and she came in contact with a yaksha who had various types of power. And she told the yaksha exactly what the story was, and the yaksha says, don't worry about it. I will trade my maleness for your femaleness, and then you can go back, and they'll know, they think that you're a male. But at a certain period of time, you're supposed to give it back to me. Anyway, that's another story in itself. So anyway, Shikhandi came back as a male. So then what happened was that while this was going on, the
the daughter of that king, he was already getting ready to attack. So what happened is that instead of attacking, immediately the king, Drupada, he sent the messenger quickly and saying, "No, your daughter is wrong. It's a lie. My son is a male." So he sent two female servants to go and check and investigate. Is it a male or is it a female? So the two female investigators, they came and he took off his shirt. So the girl apparently appeared to be defrauding her father and making up a big, what we might call a cock and bull story, when actually what she was saying was true. So it's very interesting. You know, it was like a Hollywood story or a movie like you could never even imagine with the twists and turns that come into this particular story. So anyway, Shikhandi then, of course, grew up and learned how to fight. And King Drupada had learned from Dronacharya. He learned so many different things. So he taught Shikhandi. But as you mentioned, yes, Shikhandi was used as a foil or as a shield. And but one of the things that was interesting and remarkable is that after Bhishmadev, after he had probably 1,000 arrows in his body, and he was lying on the ground, all the arrows, and his head was just bent, when everyone crowded around him, the last thing that he said there was that, "I want it be known that I have been killed. Oh, as you will see, I will be killed by Arjun, not by this female, Shikhandi." So his male pride, or his warrior pride, was so great. The idea of being killed by a female, who had been changed temporarily into male, we call a transsexual today. Yeah. So he didn't like that idea because he would never want that. So that's all I really wanted to mention, a few of those little details and different points. And I think you mentioned that Parashara Muni was the father of Vyasadeva, yeah, and it was the husband of Satyavati, in a sense. They weren't actually married in the formal sense, but there was marriage by sexual intercourse, and that was that. Okay, that's it.
Thanks
so much. Hare Krishna.
Fascinating stories. Rancho Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Are you going today? Okay, you want to go to school?